It's been a month since the 2018 Iowa legislative session began. This hour, we take stock of what's been happening. From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. I'm joined this hour by Iowa reporters who cover the State House, James Lynch of the Gazette, Bill Petrosky of the Des Moines Register, and our own Joyce Russell. Many issues being debated, or changes to Iowa's gun laws, getting tough on so-called sanctuary cities, speed cameras get the red light, numerous budget cuts, and plenty more. Join us with your questions about issues our lawmakers are grappling with.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, it's already been about a month, since the 2018 Iowa legislative session began. So this hour, we want to take a stock of what's been happening. Joining us to do that for the entire hour, Bill Petrosky of the Des Moines Register, James Lynch of the Gazette, and our own Joyce Russell, IPR State House correspondent. Bill, James, Joyce, let's get going. We have a lot to do, and welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi, Joyce.
Great. Good to talk with you, Ben.
We have from what I can see, you probably have others to throw into this pot as well. I have about a dozen issues here that we're going to just go through and see where we are that have been debated in one form or another at the State House. And we'd like to invite our listeners, too, to join us on the issues we'll be talking about. Or perhaps issues that you feel need to be mentioned that haven't. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org is our email. Well, let's talk about this, a curious event last week. Here's a little bit of audio from it. Advocates for and against the death penalty spoke out at the State House last week to reinstate capital punishment. Yes, in Iowa. Hasn't been in Iowa since the 1960s. This would be a bill under limited circumstances. But the debate took an unexpected turn when the bill's manager announced he could not vote for it. Denison Republican Stephen Holt accepted the chairmanship of a three-member panel because he supports the death penalty in theory and believes it is morally acceptable. But after studying the issue, he concluded that capital punishment is unfairly applied.
Statistics show, without a doubt, that those of lesser means are more likely to receive the death penalty than are those with greater assets and ability to hire the best attorneys. So my conclusion after researching this bill was not exactly what I expected.
Okay, Bill Petrosky, let's start with you. How unusual is this?
Real unusual. I've been around. I covered my first legislative session in Minnesota in 1978, and you used to see this kind of thing in floor votes where some members of both parties would kind of waver back and forth. But in recent years, things have been so hardened ideologically that it's very rare for somebody to back off and change their mind on something like that. So this is very unusual, and I think folks who know Representative Holt know that he's a man of firm moral conviction. He's a retired Marine first sergeant, and he takes things, life and death matters, very seriously, and I think that's what happened in this case.
Mm-hmm. James, let me ask you, you know, Iowa is certainly not a state that you connect with the death penalty. Hasn't been since, as I mentioned, the 1960s. Where's the push coming from as far as you can see?
I'm not really sure, Ben. Typically, this comes up when there's some sort of a event. And for example, Representative Cole Baudler referred back to the Jet Set of Gage case here in Lynn and Johnson counties from, I think, almost about 10 years ago, a young girl who was raped and killed. And, you know, in that case, he said that guy shouldn't have the right to breathe anymore, that the death penalty should be applied. We haven't had one of those events, you know, within the past year to sort of precipitate a death penalty debate. But it's always there. I mean, it keeps coming up. And it's interesting that you know, every 2 years, Iowans have an opportunity to elect a pro-death penalty legislature, and that hasn't happened since the mid-1960s when it was ended here. So I think there's sort of a always present support for the death penalty, but it just doesn't seem to get to the majority.
Mm-hmm. And I would add, this is Joyce Russell, I would add that even before this unusual move by Representative Holt, Representative Clell Bodler, the chair of the Public Safety Committee, he had counted the votes, and even without Representative Holt saying, I'll go to the Public Safety Committee, but I will argue vociferously against this bill, He doesn't have enough Republican votes in his committee to pass it. So, and this is the bill in the Senate is a bill with to apply the death penalty in limited circumstances. This House bill would have been more extensive and applied the death penalty for anyone convicted of first-degree murder. And the Jetsetta Gage incident, that's really what prompted the kind of bill that they're still considering in the Senate, where someone kidnaps someone, maybe sexually assaults a child, and then it's to his advantage to kill the child, and that's the argument. If this bill comes up in the Senate, this more limited one, that's the argument we'll be hearing.
Mm. Okay, join
us. If I could just jump in here. Part of this was related to the fact that we had two police officers killed here within the last year or so in the Des Moines area. Mm-hmm. Urbandale police officer, Des Moines police officer, an ambush-style killings. The one thing this has been considered kind of a settled matter, though, for years, and the people who have opposed capital punishment, they pointed out that offenders convicted of first-degree murder in Iowa are rarely released on parole. And it's very unusual for somebody to be paroled. Our governors have not been paroling murders. Usually these people die in prison, and we just had a recent case of that with a very heinous murder that happened here in Iowa in 1968. Robert Anthony Williams kidnapped a young girl, sexually assaulted her, and murdered her in 1968 on Christmas Eve. Everybody here in Des Moines remembers that it was a terrible case, but he just died in prison here very recently ago, not long ago.
Bill Petrosky with us of the Des Moines Register, James Lynch of the Gazette, Joyce Russell of Iowa Public Radio. Looking
hey,
over.
Ben,
one thing
about this debate that I think Joyce was there at the same hearing I was at, and there were a couple times when speakers finished and we kind of looked at each other and said, were they for it or against it? This was a very different debate than I've heard on death penalty in the past. So a lot of times people are very strident about why they believe in it or why they oppose it. This was not that sort of a hearing where people were really taking those sorts of positions. It was a lot about, what Representative Holt said, that people of lesser means don't get treated the same as wealthier people, and the idea that if you make a mistake, you can't fix it. You can let somebody out of prison if they've been wrongly convicted, but as one person said, you can't resurrect them after the death penalty.
Yeah, and I think that, there's been more and more publicity of exonerations of people on death row. They go after DNA evidence. There are entire, initiatives, innocence projects designed to get people off of death row because they're not supposed to be there. And I think that, over time, is influencing this death penalty debate.
Join our discussion as we discuss a variety of issues, as many as we can get to this hour. Joyce Russell, James Lynch, and Bill Petrosky on this hour, sort of a reporter's roundtable on the first month of the 2018 legislative session. Of course, Governor Kim Reynolds signed as her first bill into law the state's new water quality legislation. It was a bit of a contentious affair, with some saying it didn't go far enough. Larry in Alcater emails us with a related issue. Actually, it could have been something that some said would have helped our water quality. Larry's question: what will it take to get the legislature to raise the sales tax 0.375 to fund the Natural Resources Trust Fund, a measure that 2/3 of Iowans support? Larry and Alcater asked that question. Bill, can I dish that your way? And this was something that had overwhelming support among Iowans, what, in 2010?
That's exactly right. And the Des Moines Register has repeatedly polled on this question, and we've repeatedly seen strong public support for this type of thing. Last year there was a big coalition of all sorts of farm groups, environmental groups, outdoor recreation groups that came out in support of it. But the fact of the matter is there are a lot of Republicans who have simply taken pledges and they've said, we are not going to raise taxes, period, and so they just aren't going to support it. I think that's basically the bottom line on this.
When we talk about this water quality bill that was signed as the first new law of the 2018 session, James, in what way were certain people pleased and others not?
Well, I think a lot of groups were pleased that now something has been passed and they can say we're addressing water quality issues. Look, when we pass this bill, there's going to be around $280 million of state funds available over 12 years, and they hope to leverage that into much, much more to address water quality issues. But I think the test here is going to be what the legislature does next. They've put down a marker. They've started this water quality improvement, but I don't think anybody sees this as solving the problem, that there are going to need to be more steps.
Right, another step. I mean, can we even, under this new law, do we even measure progress by monitoring water?
Well, that's one of the complaints or criticisms of it, is that there isn't measurement in it to know whether we're making progress.
Right.
And
if you want to know you're going to lose weight, what do? James, you step on a scale, right?
Exactly.
If you don't want to know, perhaps you just leave the scale in the store or leave
dieting. I'm dieting.
Anyway, join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk a little bit about some of the budget issues. School funding, Joyce, you've been reporting about that. Understand, so GOP legislators plan a, 1% hike in school aid? It's cleared some committees last week. Give us some background. How do we arrive at 1%, and is that the figure perhaps or likely to go to the governor's desk?
It's almost certainly going to go to the governor's desk, and it's almost certainly going to go to the governor's desk this week, because there is a state law that says the legislature should set school funding in the first 30 days of a session. This is a part of a pattern. The last 3 years, the percentage of increase in state funding has been below the inflation level. It was 1.1% this year, I think 2.25% last year, 1.25% the year before. School people will say that, they're cut to the bone, and if it's 1% or even the 1.5% Governor Reynolds is recommending, that they're going to have to lay off staff and things like that. And 4% raises were not uncommon in the past, as recently as 5 or 6 years ago. There were several years where they got 4% raises. So this is a bit of an aberration.
Mm-hmm. Bill, aren't the Republicans saying, hey, we've got budget problems here, 1%, that's better than nothing and much better than a cut, right?
Absolutely, and you're probably aware that the state universities are going to, through these mid-year deappropriations, the three state universities, community colleges, are going to lose a total of about $24 million, and they are, besides themselves, that's kind of a separate but related issue here. In fact, I've talked with some Democrats who have said, gosh, it's kind of amazing, this deappropriations bill is going to hold K-12 school programs harmless, and some of the Democrats are even surprised that the Republicans have said we're not going to take a dime of money away during the middle of the school year from the K-12 programs.
Hmm. Other areas may be looking at the budget acts as well, Bill. We have the judicial branch, human services.
Yep.
Have you been looking into any of those?
Absolutely. Well, I think the big thing here is the situation with the Iowa courts. The state courts administrator has warned that if these cuts go through as proposed by Senate Republicans, that courthouses and, well, the courtrooms, court services in 30 Iowa counties are going to be shut down. And if that happened, it would be indefinite. And you can just imagine where this is going to happen. It's going to be happening in small rural counties, and it's definitely not the kind of thing that rural legislators are going to want to see. And that's why you haven't seen an agreement between the House and the Senate on these, because I think a lot of House Republicans want to back away from what these Senate Republican cuts are looking like.
Mm-hmm. There is some sentiment among House Republicans in favor of the courts, some dismay over the cuts that have already happened to the courts' budget. So I'm really looking for that Senate proposed cut that it's not going to be that big. They're going to get cut because Governor Reynolds has also recommended cuts, and they already have, you know, more than 100. I can't remember the number of vacant judgeships because they don't have the money to fill them, and the courts are, you know, they're complaining that the trials get delayed, justice gets delayed.
Right. We are, you know, the country has been recovering. Iowa's enjoyed low unemployment rates here. James, give us your reading on what's at the heart of the budget shortfall. The Democrats would say, I guess, from what I'm seeing, the projections are not all as bad as the Republicans make them out to be.
Well, we've seen revenues fall short of projections the last couple of years. And as the governor says every time she talks about this, the revenue is growing, just not as fast as we thought it would grow, or I guess unsaid, as fast as we need it to grow. So the revenue is growing, but it's not growing very fast. Farm commodity prices are low. That has an impact. Changing purchasing habits. People are buying things online, and the state isn't collecting sales tax on all those purchases. They all have an impact on the budget, and the way the legislature is trying to deal with this is, you know, de-appropriate in the middle of the year, which they don't like to do. It's unpopular, and that's why they're not touching K-12 education, because that affects a whole lot of Iowans in a way that they see it and feel it, so they don't want to touch that. But they have to make some choices. One of the things that's interesting is the governor recommended somewhere around $35, $40 million in de-appropriations. Senate Republicans set a higher number, saying they wanted to have some cushion in case the revenue projections fall again and they don't want to have to come back and make a second cut, which they had to do last year, essentially make two rounds of cuts. I guess they're taking Norm Abrams' advice this year and measure twice and cut once to avoid that hard decision, you know, later in the fiscal year, which ends June 30th, to cut the budget again or borrow from the reserves.
But I think it's clear that, you know, we have elections coming up, and I can already hear in some of the Democratic imagining, some of the Democratic platforms and campaign ads, that right now anyway, the state revenues are projected to grow by 4% next year, and it looks like schools are going to get one to 1.5%, whatever they're able to agree on with the governor. I think is probably going to be 1%. And then I think that's an argument they're going to be making. If revenues are growing by 4%, shouldn't schools get more than 1%?
Review of the first month at the Iowa legislature in 2018. Joyce Russell, James Lynch, and Bill Petrosky with us this hour. Before we go to break, let's tackle this. Some battles over reproductive rights. In her condition of the state address last month, Governor Kim Reynolds reiterated her support for right-to-life issues.
We protected life, standing up for the most vulnerable by protecting late-term abortions, and we will never stop fighting to protect the unborn.
Okay, Governor Kim Reynolds last about a month ago. So what's afoot at the legislature now? I'm seeing that abortion opponents plan to focus on several measures. Who wants to jump in here?
This is Bill Petrosky. Hey, you know, I've been around. I actually I'm old enough to remember the 1973 U.S. Supreme Court decision, Roe v. Wade. And, you know, I think that right now, and I've been covering legislatures and state government since the 1970s, I think last year we had one of the most divisive debates on abortion rights that we've ever had. You know, the legislature, the state capitol, was just packed day after day with all these people in pink from Planned Parenthood, and they were chanting, "Our body, our choice." And at the same time, there were scores of abortion people singing Christian hymns and lobbying for legislation that would help protect the sanctity of life. One of the things is, I mentioned to you folks before the show, people from the family leader, Bob Vanderplatz, they feel that, you know, the national mood is changing a little bit, and they also see the potential for changes in the U.S. Supreme Court, that perhaps at some point the Supreme Court is going to allow more leeway for states to take action on this issue, and they would like to make Iowa be the state that overturns Roe v. Wade. I don't think that's going to happen this session, but certainly there's a lot of interest in folks in the pro-life movement, anti-abortion movement, to do that. I don't think the votes are there right now at the Iowa Capitol, though.
There are a couple of abortion-related bills that have been introduced. There's one up for a subcommittee discussion this week that has to do with a cause of action for wrongful birth and wrongful life. There's another fetal heartbeat bill out there. And then another bill that appears to redirect federal funds. You know, last year the big movement was to make sure that no money, family planning money, goes to any agency that performs abortions, even though they were not paying for abortions, and that, of course, is Planned Parenthood. There's another bill that appears to try to redirect federal funds that maybe now are going to Planned Parenthood, redirect them to, once again, you know, kind of stick it to Planned Parenthood. And the last year's bill actually resulted in some clinics closing.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder, with the moves afoot here at the legislature regarding reproductive rights, do any of you have a sense of where Iowa sits in the context of the other states with our reproductive rights? I don't know if anyone has looked at that. Apparently not. Well, we'll see. As the legislature continues on, any sense of how this will play out this session at this early date?
Well, Ben, James Lynch here. This is an issue that usually plays out towards the end of the session.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they keep working and working and working on this, trying to find some legislation that they can get, you know, 51 votes in the House and 26 in the Senate. We saw this last year where it went down nearly to the end of the session. There were some late night committee meetings or almost all night committee meetings as the parties tried to find some common ground or prevent the legislation from moving forward. So I don't expect anything to happen soon. I would expect, you know, late March or April, before we really see this come together.
James Lynch, stand by. Joyce Russell, Bill Petrosky, our guests this hour as we discuss the first month of the legislative session. From reporters' vantage point, they cover the State House regularly. It's their beat. We'd like to have you join our conversation with your question about issues currently being debated at the Iowa Legislature. Perhaps you have a question about an issue that hasn't been mentioned. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or river to river at iowapublicradio.org. When we come back, we'll talk about a bill to ease the penalties for first-time possession of small amounts of marijuana, some transportation issues, and possibly some changes to the bottle bill. Bill mentioned the 1970s. Well, our bottle bill goes back to that time, too. I'm Ben Kiefer. We'll be back in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Bill Petrosky of the Des Moines Register, James Lynch of the Gazette, and our own Joyce Russell, IPR State House correspondent, on board this hour to talk about the first month of the 2018 legislative session in Des Moines. can join our conversation with issues that we've been talking about in the first half hour, or perhaps issues that you'd like lawmakers to address. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Well, let's talk about this bill to ease the penalties for first-time possession of small amounts of marijuana. It cleared a Republican-dominated panel last month. The GOP lawmaker stressing that marijuana would still be illegal in Iowa, but possessing 5 grams or less would be a simple misdemeanor instead of a serious misdemeanor. Urbandale Republican Brad Zahn says youthful indiscretion is penalized too harshly under the current law.
I give them an opportunity to kind of get that erased from the, or get that erased from their record. This charge follows these younger people or these adults that make these decisions, which ruins, I think, their opportunities with job and employment.
So making it a simple misdemeanor, which is punishable by up to 30 days in jail, a fine of up to a few $100s, instead of the serious misdemeanor punishment, which would be up to a year in jail and a fine of a greater degree of fine there. Bill Petrosky, how do you see this, introduced, obviously, by a Republican-led legislature here?
Right. This is one of those bills that Brad Zahn has introduced before, and my guess is it's probably not going to pass both chambers this session, but there's a lot of bills that legislators pass year after year. They want to kind of educate folks on them, and they feel like, hey, at some point the time is going to come for this bill. And what he points out is that young people who get arrested for first offense possession of marijuana, a lot of times this can prevent you from getting a college scholarship, workforce opportunity, this kind of thing. There was a fiscal note prepared last year by the Iowa Legislative Services Agency that it said that in the 2016 fiscal year, Iowa had about 3,400 convictions for first offense of marijuana. And they said that if this type of thing had been in place, there would have been fewer people going to jail, prison, community-based corrections, fewer placements for parole and probation. In particular, though, they said this would have a positive impact on Iowa's African-American community. In 2016, 18% of the people convicted of first offense marijuana possession in Iowa were African-Americans, even though the state's population of African-Americans was only 3.5%. So this was a very disproportionate impact upon African-Americans.
Mm-hmm. I'm reading that the lone Democrat on that three-member Senate panel argued to go further than just to in fact legalize the recreational use of marijuana. I think in some lawmakers' views, the longer view, I think you said educational, that they see some see Iowa on a glide path with certainly other states far in front of Iowa on a glide path, that it will recreational use of marijuana will eventually get here. I don't know how the three of you feel, having observed lawmakers tackle this issue with medical marijuana, and now this this move here, proposal, perhaps not going to pass, make it to the governor's desk.
I just wanted to add, Bill Petrosky again here, I asked Governor Kim Reynolds, after here several months ago, you probably saw several states have been legalizing recreational marijuana, and I asked her point blank, I said, is this something that you would do, something that you would go for, that you could, for example, get additional tax revenue? And she gave me a one-word answer, no.
End of conversation.
Right.
And actually, on the federal level, the Attorney General on the federal level has already implied that any lenience that was being shown to states that defy federal law and liberalize their marijuana laws, that they may not be so held so harmless as they have in the past. So the chance that any, I think there's very little chance that any state under these circumstances, and certainly not Iowa, would move in the direction of more liberal marijuana laws.
Join our conversation as we discuss state lawmaking. Joyce Russell, James Lynch, Bill Petrosky, 1-866-780-9100. Andrew is with us in Des Moines. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for listening. What do you want to chip in today?
Hi. I remember hearing some coverage about how Medicaid had been privatized in the last year or two,
mm-hmm.
and my general sense is that it was kind of a messy process, that there's been some carriers entering and exiting the market, and I have not had the sense from either party that it's been particularly smooth or gone. No, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
I was wondering if there had been any talk from either party about revisiting it or shoring it up somehow.
Right. Anything?
And, what kind of discussion?
Right.
Yeah.
Andrew, yeah, anything but smooth. Originally to be introduced in January of 2016, if I remember right, pushed off until later in the spring, and then even then a rocky rollout. And every time we do talk shows about Medicaid and the organizations that rely on it, you'll get an earful of this. Joyce, James, Bill, talk about this. Anything afoot happening in the legislature?
Well, Governor Reynolds has made clear that she has no intention of backing off the privatization of Medicaid. She's said repeatedly it's not perfect, but that we're not going to go back, and that this is the only way for Medicaid to remain sustainable with price increases in the future. Now, critics would object to that or maybe disagree with that, but she's certainly given no indication of any interest in backing off.
Mm-hmm. Ben, Bill, there has been
here.
Some
go ahead.
Legislation introduced by Democrats that would move the management of Medicaid back under the, I guess, the Department of Human Services, rather than have it handled by private contractors. Obviously, since Democrats are in the minority, the likelihood of that passing is rather small. But what's interesting, I think, is the number of Republicans who are showing impatience and concern with the transition to privately managed Medicaid. You know, House Speaker Linda Upmeyer talks about it's working in other states. It has to work here. And I'm guessing that some of them are lawmakers are getting an earful when they go home to their district and are looking ahead to the election and seeing that this is a potential campaign issue that could work against them if they aren't able to find some solution in the next few months here.
Join our conversation. James Lynch, Bill Petrosky, Joyce Russell. Let's talk about some firearms issues. Of course, the 2017 legislative session, a whole slew of new firearms laws passing the legislature, becoming law here in Iowa. I'm looking at other possible ones. A limited exception to Iowa's law making it a felony to carry firearms onto school property, clearing an initial hurdle at the State House. With the backing of the Iowa Firearms Coalition. Bill, is this something that you've been watching?
To be honest with you, no, but that's an issue that has come up previously. My recollection, a lot of the issue with that school property is, hey, if you are a law enforcement officer off duty, you should be able to have that weapon on you without violating the law.
Right, and there's so many... Now, Iowans carrying because of the changes in the law that, you know, if you carry a weapon, you need to pick up someone. I guess the argument goes you need to pick up someone at school and you're carrying. It's easy to bring it onto school property.
And that's what the bill that you're referring to, that it would carve out that exception. And actually that cleared a subcommittee with the Democrat, Senator Kinney, who is a law enforcement officer. He voted for that, so there's some bipartisan support for that. It still brings out, you know, this they just debated that. It's a very limited exception to the law, but they debated it on very close to the time when there was another school shooting, and so, you know, some people just cannot see their way to however limited it is. Just cannot see liberalizing guns on school property, even if it is someone, as you just said, someone going to the school to drop off a kid or pick up a kid and maybe not even getting out of their car to do so. So I think that could pass this year.
Mm-hmm. Here's another education-related question. This is from Amy, one of our listeners. She asks, do you anticipate a school voucher bill passing this session. How would they justify diverting public funds from public schools with our current budget situation, asks our listener, Amy.
James Lynch here. I expect that there certainly will be a debate on vouchers or educational savings accounts, as some people prefer to call them. Whether it'll pass, I don't know. The budget consideration may affect that. But there are a lot of folks who, especially among the Republican caucuses, that believe this is, you know, a choice that parents make where they want to send their kids to school, and they should basically that the money should follow the student, and whether they go to the public school or a religious school or a private school, they should get that money to support their education where they choose it. It would certainly have an impact on public school funding, and there is vigorous opposition to that, as we talked about, with only a 1% increase in aid to local schools. Every dollar and every penny is going to be fought for.
I think that it was the budget that kept this from actually getting some serious attention last year, although they had a huge lobby day where I've said this before, that I think they had every private school kid in the state put on the same color T-shirt and come to the state and state house and lobby for school choice. Representative Walt Rogers is one of the main backers of this. He's a Republican from Cedar Falls. And he has said that they may put together something more limited and less expensive than what they proposed last year. It's definitely a high priority for many Republicans.
John in Des Moines dialed 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to John. Hi, John. Thanks for tuning in.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. What do you got in your mind?
Yeah, so I'm thinking about this proposal to reduce first-time marijuana possession to a simple misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. And if the point of that is to provide people an opportunity to reduce the impact of that, and with regard to school applications and job applications and everything else, they should consider making that conviction eligible for expungement after 2 years, just like right now a public intoxication conviction is.
Okay. Interesting observation, John. I don't know if our panelists have anything to respond to there. Bill?
That idea has not been part of the bill, I can just tell you that.
Okay. Another education, Bill, I wanted to get in here before our hour ends, is a so-called transgender bathroom bill. Iowa House Republicans introducing a bill last week that would protect schools and businesses that choose to limit transgender people's access to restrooms. So this was, of course, an issue that blew up a couple years ago, nationwide. Who's been watching this in particular?
Well, it's
Joyce?
it's just been introduced. I don't think there's been any action on it yet. I will say that there was a Southeast Iowa legislative race. It was a special election, and this became an issue in that race with a Republican candidate promising to push for a transgender bathroom bill, and the Democratic candidate arguing against that, and the Democrat did win that race. It was so that was kind of a victory on that issue. I don't know how wide the support for it is in the existing legislature.
I'd just like to say that this kind of falls into the category of we see some bills introduced, and they're introduced to help to kind of represent the views of a certain interest group. But the fact of the matter is that I think that even Republicans who might be somewhat sympathetic to this in terms of the religious liberties issue and that type of thing, they don't want to touch this because a lot of pro-business Republicans just know how detrimental this can be from a national perspective. If you look at what happened to Indiana and some other places where this has been perceived very negatively among the general public when this type of thing is advanced.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those issues, Ben, this is James Lynch, that probably isn't going to go anywhere except on campaign brochures.
We'll see it this fall, you know, that Joe Blow wouldn't support transgender bathrooms, or Joe Blow, you know, opposed letting businesses set their own rules on who can use their bathroom. I mean, it's that sort of an issue where it'll show up in campaign brochures, but may not go anywhere in the legislature.
Okay, we have about 5 minutes left with James Lynch, Bill Petrosky, and Joyce Russell. Let's talk about possible changes to the bottle bill deposit law. We talked about the 1970s, Roe v. Wade. Also, the 40-year-old bottle bill is being addressed as perhaps needing an update. It puts a 5-cent deposit on every can or bottle of carbonated beverage in the state. And I have to say, having lived before that time and experienced the change, and I think Bill and others here will know that it cleaned up Iowa quite quickly, got a lot of trash, litter off of our streets and out of our ditches, and is responsible for putting a lot of these cans into recycling, bottles into recycling, instead of having them be buried in landfills. But now some are saying we need an update here. Bill, do you know about this?
Sure do. And this is something, if you read the Des Moines Register this week, make sure you see our new poll that we have coming out on this issue. But in general, the situation is that we have things headed in two entirely different directions. We have over 40 state legislators in the House co-sponsoring a bill that would expand the law to include water, juice, sports drinks, and bottles, and they would keep the 5-cent deposit. And part of the idea is that they would increase the number of redemption centers. At the same time, you have people who run grocery stores and convenience stores. They say they've had it with this, and they've spearheaded a push to replace the bottle deposit requirement with an expanded state recycling program and a litter control program that will eliminate the need for grocers to redeem cans and bottles. If you've ever collected those things for Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or another organization and had them, hundreds and thousands of them sitting in your garage like I have, you know how unsanitary they are, how smelly they are, they get bugs on them. So
yep.
you can sympathize with the grocery. At the same time, Iowa has just a tremendous recycling rate with these. I think the latest figure is 71% recycling for these types of containers, which is down from the past, but it's still much higher than national averages.
Mm-hmm. Another impact that would be on the homeless. Obviously, you see a lot of homeless people making ends meet through the return of bottles and cans. In fact, I spoke to a homeless person, I guess this is a few years ago. I said, asked the question, so how much money can you make? He had a big, big sack on his back, and he said, well, one of these is probably $7 or $8, which is, you know, keeps you in food for a day or so if you spend it right. James or Joyce, did you have anything else to add to this? Are we likely to see the end of the bottle bill? What will replace it?
I have not heard that homeless argument mentioned at the State House. And I will say that every year there's a talk of, as Bill just said, going in opposite directions. There's talk of expanding the bottle bill. There's talk of getting rid of it. I don't see any indication that, and it's always come down to a stalemate, so I don't see any indication that it's going to be any different this year.
Mm-hmm. We have just a few minutes left. Who's got a burning issue to list that we haven't talked about this hour? I've got a couple others, but I wanted to give you all a chance here. Jump in. Okay.
If you want to ask me about something, the top red story that I have online this entire session is about a bid to amend the U.S. Constitution that's advanced in the Iowa Senate. It was passed by the Iowa House, I think, in two previous sessions, and the idea is that it would be an initiative to amend the U.S. Constitution to restrict the authority of the federal government. That has gotten just tremendous online readership, DesMoinesRegister.com. It's something that is passed in a number of states. You're probably aware there's if you listen to conservative talk radio, this is something that's been proposed a lot of different places. I think A few states have passed it, and they're far from doing this thing. Well, I think if Iowa passed it, it would become the 13th state to call for a convention of the state. And Article 5 of the convention says that you'd need to have at least 34 states to have this convention of the states proceed. But I think it's just a real interesting public policy argument, and a lot of people have been interested in it.
Okay, before we close, we've run out of time, but of course a reminder here, the Iowa caucuses are held tonight for the two major state political parties. Yes, the caucuses are every year, not just during the presidential election years. Tonight's caucuses will be mainly about party building, creating a platform. In a joint statement this morning, Iowa's Republican and Democratic state parties say that the meetings aren't being canceled, though today's winter storm could be problematic, obviously, for some voters. If you'd like to find your caucus location, first determine which voter precinct you are in, then find your party's caucus location within that precinct. The ACLU of Iowa has a page with links to help you figure that out if you'd like to Google the ACLU. Tomorrow on this program, we're going to talk about the fact that in the two of the past five presidential elections, the candidate who became president was not the one most Americans voted for. As we're talking about the Electoral College, why we elect our presidents indirectly instead of directly. I want to thank our guests for this hour, James Lynch, politics and investigative reporter with the Gazette, Bill Petrosky, public affairs reporter for the Des Moines Register, and of course, Joyce Russell, IPR State House correspondent. James, Bill, Joyce, thanks so much for a wonderful hour.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you. Good talk with you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Ben Stanton, and Lindsay Moon, with help from today from Natalia Reyes. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Have fun in the snow, people. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.